There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question, kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Second hour on a Wednesday, too. It's almost like weekend time ahead. And with a shortened week, you're like, wow, it already got here? Well, yeah, we had a little tropical storm to get through as we went through the week. Check in with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and check in on what's hot right now at the shop. I mean, for gifts, and let's talk about precious metals as well.
Well, as far as the gift side, it's so random what people are coming in for. But as you well know, no matter what your passion is or what it is you're looking for, we've probably got something that'll fit the bill here.
For sure.
Whether it's those cool shipwreck coins, your favorite, the open-L pocket knives, of course, and then all the other interesting different pieces of jewelry. Matter of fact, I think I sent you a private text the other day about a piece of jewelry that came available, and you passed on it, but we had three other people that were interested in it, so it sort of goes down the line. We have so many cool items in stock. You just got to come by and check it out. And come by in a couple of weeks because our inventory will have changed at that point in time.
That's what I like, too, that y'all remember what somebody has bought. And, you know, you say, okay, last time you got this item, maybe, you know, you're interested in this other item out there that kind of matches that. I mean, because some of us may or may not forget what we what we've done in the past for gifts, and it's nice to have that that steering hand.
Well, it really is convenient and helpful. I mean, Anna's got a really, really good eye for jewelry. And we've got quite a few customers that'll come in, and she knows what they're looking for. And she'll, you know, tell me, "Hey, we need to keep this aside for so and so." And I'm like, "I'm not even sure who you're talking about." But the next thing you know, they're walking in. I recognize their faces. They buy it, and I go, "Aha!" But yeah, it's great because we can call you, text you, put something out on Facebook, and then you know we've got gold and silver bullion. We've got all the rare coins. It's just a lot of stuff to take in when you come to Mobile Bay Coin.
Hey, what's going on right now with precious metal, gold, silver? What's the what are they trading for?
Gold
what?
And silver dropped really hard. Silver dropped and is slowly starting to rebound. It's way under $15 right now. So in my mind, the best bet at the moment is silver. So if you've been on the fence and thinking about buying some gold or silver bullion, come down to the shop. Come on inside. Whether you want to buy 1 ounce or 100 ounces, you know, we can get you taken care of.
All right. Give us directions to come see you.
We're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street, and the road is moderately dry in front of the shop. You can always call us at 725-1590, or go into Facebook and like and follow Mobile Bay Coins there.
Hey, thanks, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
You too. Angelo checking in for Mobile Bay Coins. Yeah, speaking of the roadways and flooding there, we've got issues in Mobile County. We have issues. And by the way, it looks like Dauphin Island fared a lot better. You heard Bill Riles in the news report there. The sand on the west end, nowhere near the issue it was like last year with Nate. It says, you know, they had the water there but didn't have as much sand as in the past. That's good. They're going to get things back open. Still, right now, they have a checkpoint there before you go to the whole way down to the west end. And I did get a note from some of my friends on the island here. And specifically, yeah, I got a note here from Captain Charlie Gray, I think. He sent something to me that said the power is back on. Yeah, power's back on Dauphin Island. Now, it was on the east side of the island, east of Lemoyne, earlier this morning when we talked to Mayor Collier. But it looks like as of midday today, the power back on. I think for the majority of the island, I mean, if there's specific damage down the west end, it may not be in those places. But I know where he is, and he is west of the four-lane, two-lane interchange there on Bienville, and power's back on there. So good news. All right, so I saw Sip and Chew, who go by the names of Mike and Stu, hanging around the studio here. And I don't know what they're in here doing, but I'm going to bring them in here and talk food. How about that? And so get your knife, get your fork, get your spoon, get your appetite, and get ready. We'll talk some food scene when we get back here with Mike and Stu from Sip and Chew right here on FM Talk 106.5.
is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. Remember, online at fmtalk1065.com. Check us out, facebook.com/fmtalk1065. On Twitter, where I'm fed some pictures from Dolphin Island today and the aftermath of Gordon. You can check those out at FM Talk 106.5 on Twitter. Remember, podcasts of this show and all the other daily shows we do here, you can check out by going to the podcast drop-down on the front page of fmtalk1065.com. All right, so for other reasons, they didn't actually come in to see me, but they were here at the radio station, and I wrangled them because I listened to these guys on Sunday mornings, but I'm not in here with them on Sunday mornings, so it's good to see Mike and Stu from Sip and Chew in the station. Thanks for being here, and thanks for letting me co-opt y'all onto my show.
Oh, well, thank you. We appreciate Absolutely. It.
Yeah, tell folks, too, who have not checked out the show before, Sip and Chew, what do y'all do?
We're a wine and food show.
We're a food and wine
show. Here they go.
Here we go.
I mean, it's, the culture of where we live, or where anybody lives, this is me as an outsider, not a professional in the business, but is defined by a lot of things, but one big definition of who we are is what we eat, right, and what we drink.
Exactly. Well, I am. I'm a big, big fat ham right now.
Well, I read a book a number of years ago. I forget the author's name, but he was a writer from New York, a travel writer from the 1920s, and he was given the task of writing a book about the most exotic place he'd ever been, and he decided it was a place called Alabama.
Okay.
And the book's name is Stars Fell on Alabama, and he starts at Muscle Shoals and works his all the way down and ends up at Mobile, and he's talking about Mobile, and he said the culture of Mobile is different from any other place in America.
Got that right.
He said because in the rest of America, keep in mind this is the Roaring Twenties when people were rolling in
flappers and all that jazz. Yeah,
he said people in the rest of the country are defined by what they do for a living. People in Mobile are defined by what they do when they're not at work.
Well, gosh, I think that's still true to some degree. I mean, maybe not as much as them, but we define people by their hobbies.
Yeah, their water sports, bow hunting, fishing. Mm-hmm.
They're a golfer. They're a golfer. They race cars. They hunt. They fish. Mm-hmm. They run. They're a triathlete. They're a sailor. There's something to that all these years later.
Right. And, food is one of the things that most of us do when we're not working. Grilling out, going
Vouch
to
for
dinner.
That. Yeah.
In my case, while you're working too.
Right. And people who have not checked out the show, of course, a professional chef.
Yeah. 30 years in the restaurant industry. I'm the chef at Bellacera Gardens, which is a posh wedding venue over in
Longsley. I'll be there this Saturday.
Yeah. And I do restaurant consulting as well. I've worked with a number of restaurants in the area, just come in for a short time to help them fine tune things or cover things when they have holes and things. And I do food writing, and I host a show with this guy who is, in my opinion, the number one wine expert in South Alabama.
Yeah, and Mike Bailey has been doing this a long time here.
Decades.
And you've watched, that's what I want to get into. Number one, talk about what you do, but there has to have been some pretty big changes in the wine business if you've been doing it for any period of time.
Quite a bit, yeah. I've been drinking wine and selling all I can for 32 years now. So drink all I can and sell the rest is what I always say. But also, I work in the paper industry, too. I sell paper products and stuff like that.
Okay.
But
two restaurants and bars and stuff. So it's all linked.
So it's all linked. But wine will never go away.
But it seems like there's a lot more people on board that boat right now, the last decade or so. Like, I grew up in a house. I have my parents are both wine enthusiasts. I mean, I was early on in the 80s, saw this weird looking refrigerator that came into the house, and I said, "It's not even cold in there, Dad." He said, "This is only supposed to be in the 50s, son. It's a Le Cave or something like that." So I mean, early on, I was exposed to
it. Oh, it's your Guinness refrigerator.
Yeah, that's right. Years later, I'd say that'd be good for my Guinness. But I've been around wine growing up and watching it, but it seems like, what is it, the last decade, or is what, Mike, what's the parameter when this explosion is happening?
When I got into the business 32 years ago, jug wine was we didn't even have box wine.
Chateau yet. Screwtop,
the gallon jugs of Chablis Delchamps, Delchamps brand Chablis. I remember that. Non-brand generic.
I come from retail into sales, just like that. After getting tired of working Christmas and all the holidays and Sunday mornings and all that, and I. I I went into the business, did it for 10 years, left there, got in pharmaceuticals for a little while. Hated pharmaceuticals. The money was great. So I went right back into the wine business. So I went from alcohol to drugs. I did drugs and alcohol for a little while. And then I just gave up the drugs and just did alcohol
only.
You're
going to be an E-true story.
So, but I mean, then if you get back into it, mm-hmm. you have watched that change from the box of Chablis to the fact that my neighbors are sitting there going, I don't know, the score on this wine is a such and such, but it has a hint of marmalade and an oaky char. And I'm like, dude, you used to drink dang Milwaukee's Best Light. Yeah. We grew up together, man, you know?
But, you know, when I got into it after pharmaceutical sales and I went back into the wine business, I looked at the company I was working with, and I looked at the portfolio, and I said, how many more Chardonnays can we bring in? How many more calves can we bring in? It's just ridiculous. You got to have them, but aren't there enough already? What's wrong with the beer we're drinking?
Right.
Don't
have
beer.
No, you need beer.
You need more beer. You need more different types of beer and styles. So I looked out there, and somebody brought me this brand that nobody else wanted, so I took it on, and it exploded. And it just happened to be exploding at the right time because it was exploding nationwide, and we just happened to be the company with it because the big guys didn't want it. And it was called Blackstone.
Oh, wow.
And it turned into a big item. So that being said, I'm going, how many more shards and calves can we have? And that brought Merlot dinners. But I got to look at it in other regions of the world, and so I've started bringing in Oregon wine. I started bringing in Malbec from Argentina. I brought the first Malbec ever into Alabama, and I brought the first.
Thank you for that. That's my favorite wine.
And I brought the first South African wine into Alabama, and I just started pioneering these things. And I said, well, let's try this and let's do this. It's not going to kill anybody, and I guess it can.
Well, but you're coming in. This is interesting because you're not coming in. You were creating a market because you're not coming in to say there's X number of people that already want Cabernet or Chardonnay or something like that, and I'm going to fill that. I'm going to create a new palate, a new taste here, right?
Absolutely, and a new profile, and you know, bringing in Malbec, it wasn't a Cabernet, and it wasn't a Merlot, and so it was something different, and it was from a new country. And then South African wines, I brought in what was called a Pinotage. I didn't bring in a Chardonnay, and I wasn't even interested in their Chards and all that, but they all had this distinctive characteristic about them, and every time I taste a South African wine, mainly in the red, they all have that profile. And I may have talked about this a few years ago on the show, but what that profile is. But most people in the medical industry understand the profile because it tastes like Band-Aid. Believe it or not, a Johnson & Johnson Band-Aid that they used to make back in the early days.
It's like, now there's, I never have read that in a description of wine, with a hint of Band-Aid.
Yeah, but here's the thing that I've learned, and being able to, it afforded me the opportunity to travel most of the world and be able to eat in those regions and taste the food and taste the wine, and how well they all go together, and it that brought to me, more importantly, eating locally, things that are from the farm to the table, like so many restaurants are doing today.
And I want to get into that because that's a lot of what I was getting to. But so this growth of wine, right? Mm-hmm. So then the growth of food, because I want to talk about that with you, Stu, and hear from you as well, Mike. But this idea, what was the old phrase? I mean, if you grew up around Mobile, you heard Mobile. The reason why we don't have more restaurants is Mobilians go out to eat; they don't go out to dine. Even though in the 1920s we have this description of people and the food scene here, which is the truth? Has something changed, or has it always been there?
I will say that the same thing that has sparked the catalyst in wine sales over the last decade or so is the same thing that has sparked the explosion of good food, and that's Food Network.
Yeah.
Simply put, you know,
that's the campfire to gather around and see what other people are doing.
And honestly, good wine salesman.
Yeah. Yeah. But it showed people a whole world that was out there because American food in the 50s was dreadful. It was all casseroles with canned soups dumped on top of it because mama wasn't cooking anymore.
Right.
She was in the workforce.
Yeah.
And American food got dreadful for decades. And Wolfgang Puck was the one that woke this country up when he did the first, what is it called, Governor's Ball at the Academy Awards in like 1976. And he did stuff no one had ever dreamed of before. but the media was there, and they caught on. And that started a little steamroll that when Food Network hit, the rest of the country was ready to catch up with New York, Chicago, and L.A.
Okay, well, I mean, because there's different things. I talk about it in my house, and I said, sometimes I'm cooking, sometimes I'm warming things up to a temperature to eat. Even though people would call that cooking, I said there's a difference to it.
There is.
Sometimes I'm making food edible. Right. And then sometimes I'm cooking. And a lot of times, busy families, whatever, during the week. But now there's more options even to tackle that by what's available out there. And I want to talk about this because this growth, and this is an outsider perspective. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But I've seen a bit of a circular travel, not from the 50s, but the idea that when people expanded their palates, expanded to food options, it got to be wacky, shishi. Hey, it's just there's a little wedge of ginger on there and a pea and then some drizzle, and that's a meal. And this is what everybody in New York's eating. I saw that circle go around. Now what seems to be dominating around here, and I love it, is the stuff that's our cultural food, things that maybe grandma did make, maybe other people made, but it's been brought back
and presented better.
And, yes, and elevated, but it's not some kind of crazy, this is a tofu ginger thing that doesn't look like anything around here we eat. It's the stuff we know, but it's better.
Right. Like, and a great example is the gumbo zerbs that Steve Zucker does at Dolphins, which is, in my opinion, the best gumbo in Mobile. But most people will taste it and say, at a restaurant, well, lima bean boy.
Okay, yeah.
But it's not like any gumbo you've ever had growing up. Gumbo zerb is a vegetarian gumbo.
Okay.
It's usually got collard greens or something like that in it. And then it has since added sausage, but nothing else. And then Steve Zucker smokes the gumbo. He cooks the gumbo.
Not just the sausage? Does the gumbo get smoked?
The whole thing. He's got what's called a pistole, which I believe was developed by Bob Baumhauer just for this, that hooks up to a pressure cooker and pumps smoke into the pressure cooker. So it goes in, hits the steam that's rising up, and it condensates on the roof and then rolls back in it. So he's basically making liquid smoke from scratch with each batch of the gumbo. It's phenomenal. It's brilliant. And
okay, so that's but the basis of that is you talk about a signature Gulf Coast recipe.
Right.
You're talking about gumbo. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about this thing that's called schwa that came from some some chef somewhere in the south of France. We're talking about, hey, y'all, it's gumbo, but we're going to do it. We're going to do a new take on it.
Right. It's a gumbo that you will usually only find around Lent on Fridays in New Orleans. Leah Chase is famous for her gumbo zerbs that she serves during Lent. And just like I say, the sausage has been a recent addition to it, just to make it something other than a Lenten dish.
Right.
And it's thin. There's not a lot of roux. Like I say, it is absolutely gumbo. It meets every definition, which the most important one is, it has to have okra.
Yeah.
It's not gumbo without okra, because that's what gumbo means.
I got disqualified one time because I didn't have okra in my gumbo.
See, this is kind of stuff you find out with Mike and Stu. We're coming right back. More with the Sip and Chew guys. Of course, you check their show out on Sunday mornings. But we are talking about the food scene, the wine scene, right here on our neck of the Gulf Coast. And gumbo that is smoked. I am now fascinated. I got to ask questions during the break.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. And plus, more updates on the aftermath of Tropical Storm Gordon coming up with staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams. And he's watching even more activity out in the tropics right now. But hey, it's September, and that's what we do here along the Gulf Coast. Speaking of being along the Gulf Coast, good to have my buddies in and the guys you hear on Sunday mornings. I'm right there with you listening in the vehicle on Sunday mornings to Sip and Chew with Mike and Stu. But it's good they happen to be up here for another reason. And I just said, y'all got to come on the show. So good to have you in studio and talk about food and wine in our area and smoke gumbo. I'm digging that. But am I close? Am I all wet on this, that this idea of the food movement is not one that moves the items that we're eating and we find good farther away from home, it seems to bring it back home.
Right, and that's what we're rediscovering. And the whole thing where we started bringing in food from all over the country was we wanted to showcase the best food we could.
Right.
And then we started learning, but the best food we can showcase is what's local to us. I mean, I don't go to Chicago and expect good gumbo.
Right.
But I expect a fantastic hot dog.
Sure.
They're phenomenal up there.
Mm-hmm. And when in Rome.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
I live by that, yeah.
Yeah, L.A., you know, you've got the abundance of Northern California where everything is in season all the time.
Right.
And that's where all TV shows and TV commercials are made. So we got it in our head as a nation that you should be able to get tomatoes 12 months out of the year, blueberries, apples, when all of these things are seasonal, and you should be eating what is in season when it's in season.
Yeah, if you want it to taste the best, I mean, right. there's a reason that you look back at what our progenitors ate certain times of year. It's because that was the thing that was there wasn't much shelf life, so they
For an example, Cammie's Old Dutch ice cream. I want to use
her. It's in season year round.
I want to use her as an example because
she did seasonal.
I'll
ice
go
cream,
there year round and say, peach ice cream is not in season,
right?
And she is a stickler.
But there's always something new and cool going on.
There is, because there is something in season.
Always. Yes.
There's always something, especially in an area like we live in here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Alton Brown said it when he was at the Dolphin Island Gumbo Festival several years ago, that pretty much everything he likes to eat in the world is found within 100 miles of Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
His favorite stuff. He said his favorite seafood in the world comes from the Gulf of Mexico.
That's good.
The all the vegetables and stuff that he grew up with, the produce, it's the same as us. He's from Georgia, so it's collard greens, it's peanuts, it's whatever we grow is what he grows. And he's got a point.
Yeah.
But we started seeing tomatoes on TV 12 months out of the year, and we thought, oh, we should have them. Well, of course, the grocery suppliers will go, well, if that's what you want, that's what we're going to give you.
Right.
But a good friend of mine has a great saying, life is a series of trade-offs. You can't have everything. So if you want this thing, you're going to have to give up something else. And what we gave up was freshness and flavor.
Right, just to have the thing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and when we make that trade-off, correct me if I'm wrong, but we make that trade-off, we miss something that is perfect at that time of year.
Right.
Some other thing that is in season, like you said. And talking about this kind of return to the roots, y'all mentioned it earlier. I want to come back to this, the farm-to-table thing. I mean, once again, we're basically describing my grandparents.
Exactly.
They ate what was in season. Mm-hmm. These are the things they cooked. And farm-to-table, that was normal. If people weren't farmers, they had a garden or knew somebody who did.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea of my food coming from within at least the same area code as I lived, that was just the thing. They weren't doing it to be hip.
Mm-mm.
That was just the way it was.
That's because that's where all the food came from.
It did. And I grew up sitting in front of the TV on Saturday and Sunday nights shelling beans and peas. And then my mother and grandmother put those things up for the winter.
Uh-huh.
And they still tasted just as good, you know.
Exactly. And that's another one of the
things
I miss
those days.
That is trending right now is the old preservation techniques that our grandparents use. Mm-hmm. There's a chef that is, in my opinion, he's the forefront right now of the farm-to-table movement. Is Sean Brock from Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay.
He has another restaurant in Nashville. But he grew up with his maternal grandmother, not his parents. She was an adult during the Great Depression.
Oh, wow.
So everything she did was the way they did things during the Great Depression. So if you need egg yolks for this recipe, you put the egg whites in the freezer because one day you're going to need them, right?
Right.
And he has a laboratory in Charleston just to invent new vinegars. He's invented like 120 different vinegars.
Wait a second. How many? I mean,
a collard green vinegar.
Really?
A cottonseed.
Oh, you can
vinegar.
Make vinegar out of anything.
Right. Anything that you can ferment, you can then make a vinegar with, and they're all going to have their own notes. And, you know, he was asking his chicken purveyor one time, he goes, you know, there's all this boneless, skinless chicken breast. What do you do with the skin? And he said, well, we sell it to dog food, chicken food, cat food, something like that. He goes, well, what would you sell me a case for? He goes, I'd sell you a 50-pound case of fresh chicken skin for like $5. So he brings it in, they scrape any fat off of it, clean it up, put it in the oven, and turn it into cracklins.
I love it.
Big pieces of chicken cracklins, and then they make their nachos on those, and the cracklins are the tortillas for the nachos.
Chicken cracklin versus pork. We're all used to pork.
Right. Pork like, cracklin. Right. And like Beer Garden here locally, they do pork skins that they fry on site. You know, that's one of those things coming in. Now, clearly, that's not a typical German thing, but it's something we do here in Mobile. We love our pork
skins.
There's
a place in Mississippi you can buy chicken crackling out of, and by the bag. They sell chicken crackling.
Now, I've never had it before, so I got to add that
delicious.
To my list.
It really is it's good. It's my second favorite part of the chicken behind the heart.
I'll tell you what.
My heart, skin, gizzard, then conventional pork.
You know, which I'll lose. I always lose credit for my, you know, my country roots, but I'm not a... I'm not a good parts eater, and I've tried them. It's not that I say no, but I'm like, there's a lot other pieces of the chicken that I like more.
Sean, do this.
What are most nutritious?
Yeah, but Lord, look at me. Three of us. We don't need it. I got the nutrition. I got that on lock.
We've got body by Chef Boyardee.
Sean, right. Try this. Get the chicken skin. Take it off the thigh.
Okay,
thigh's my favorite, but just any chicken skin, and. If you get it off the breast, cut it in little squares, put it on a baking sheet, put a little just salt and pepper on it. Bake it till it's crispy like a cracker. It's delicious.
And that's it.
It's delicious.
That's all you
got
to do.
That's simple. You can put a little...
Baked it without frying.
Tony Sacheri on it or...
Yeah, usually if you can layer it, parchment paper, chicken skin, parchment paper, and then something of some weight on top of it to keep it from curling up in the oven, it'll do just fine.
Yeah, I've got one of those. I got a bacon weight I can put on top of it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? The bacon press thing.
Yeah.
So.
And he's got his own little Waffle House going, doesn't he?
That's how we roll, man. We're feeding kids. I got the crew to feed there at the house. Okay, so we're talking about things that are part of our culture, and the fact is, let's start off with this question. So maybe it's not that Mobilians didn't support, because the old cliche, well, they go out to eat, but they don't go out to dine. But look at the proliferation, at least over the last 10 years, of restaurants here locally, right?
And really, probably five or six,
okay.
Yeah, the real catalyst, I think, was Dave Rasp opening the Royal Scam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was a true bistro-style restaurant doing local ingredients creatively. And then, you know, Chris comes in and opens Noble South.
Oh, my God,
you get Dumb Waiter, and you get all of these great restaurants now. But I was depressed as a chef in the city, you know, in 2012, because it didn't matter what restaurant I worked at, everybody wanted the same menu, and they wanted that menu to look like Cracker Barrel.
Mm-hmm. You know? And it doesn't, okay, if you build it, well, they will come, or, I mean, what is it? So, I mean, that's a tough thing. Do you find, just look at it, not in food, just as food and wine, but as business folks, do you figure out, I mean, normally you'd want to just get in front of it. Say, these people like such and such. Mm-hmm. Let me go get in front of them to be able to deliver such and such to them. Or is there a proven track record of, let me introduce some new things, and there is an audience here that what they want is not, they want something new.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's how I started. But the main thing was that we had to learn as chefs how to make these new things we were doing comfortable to the people we were trying to sell to.
That's the challenge.
And our good friend Carl Tilley, who's now at a golf club up Northern Alabama, Gadsden, I believe, is the executive chef. But he's the man that put Kitchen on George on the spot.
Yeah.
Won Chef of the Year. Then New Orleans came calling. But there's a very common sauce called Beurre Blanc, which means white wine and butter.
Mm-hmm.
Could not sell any dish at Kitchen on George if the sauce was listed as Beurre Blanc. He had to put lemon white wine butter sauce. If it said Beurre Blanc, if it had a word they didn't recognize, they wouldn't even order it.
Right.
That was 6-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we as chefs had
to watch it turn around. Once everybody knows it, the same people go, well, that's Beurre Blanc.
I had someone come into town over 20 years ago and opened a really great restaurant downtown on St. Michael, and later on bought a very well-established restaurant. And this guy was a CIA graduate. He's worked at some of the finest restaurants in New York and New Orleans. He comes to Mobile, and he's trying to bring these new styles in. He was just 10, 12 years ahead of his time, 15 maybe. And then he said, Mike, they want it fried. They want everything fried.
Everything fried.
And he's tried to, you know, he tried to. Now he's got a restaurant down in Orange Beach, so they left Mobile and went down there. But, yeah, I understood his challenges. I really did, because people, they want it fried. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, things have changed in our city. We've got a lot of the whole area, the Gulf.
And people aren't just eating seafood fried anymore. And I credit people like John Gibson, who's now in the Florida Keys, but he was at Bill's by the Beach in Gulf Shores. Panini Pete opened Sunset Point in Fairhope.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete was like, I don't want to fry anything on this meal.
Yeah.
And he said, there's a lot of places in this town that do fried seafood. And they
listen,
do it
I'm
very
sit
well.
Here. I'm going to stand up for... So I... I limit it because it's not the best thing for me, but right. I do dearly love fried things. You and I have had fried chicken conversations. Mm-hmm. I'm obsessive about fried shrimp when they're perfect, when I have they have the trampoline effect on the outside before it breaks through. These things are fried. I mean, I do, but I also, yeah, I'm open to... I want to see. I just want something to taste good. You know, if you tell me, "Hey, this is going to taste good," I don't care how you did it.
Right.
Let's see. Oh, okay, this is good.
Yeah, and that was what we as chefs had to do. To, you know, we were trying to shove this stuff down people's throat, and people were going, "I just want what Granny cooked me."
Right. You know?
So we had to dress up what Granny cooked.
Right. But and that's the thing. When I look at the menu on these kind of places, I say, "That's a fried chicken." I know that. Mm-hmm. You know, it has these extra things. I'm like, "Wow, that's really, really good." But I'm, there's home cooking that has this extra flair, you know, that takes it to the next level. Right. I wonder this. You're talking about the proliferation of restaurants, 2012 going forward. Yeah. How much of this is dependent on, was the audience here before that, or were they waiting to go, and then the economy got better? Is it tied, people dining out? How much of
That's
that is tied to the economy?
Because during the recession, people were looking for the best value for their
money. Sure.
And, you know, survival is a strong instinct.
Yes, it is.
But I think it was a lot of people coming in from other areas. That is one, you know, people say, "I don't want any more new people coming in." Well, guess what? New people coming in is why we have jazz. Because we brought people in from other parts of the world other than Europe.
And jazz has tried and failed in Mobile. Now it's starting to thrive in Mobile.
Right. But I mean just the entire genre of jazz here because we brought people in not from Europe. Country music exists because people from Scotland and Ireland came here. You know, rock and roll exists because we had this influx of gospel and you know, the southern black churches and bringing African rhythms, and it's all these things mixed together.
Now, so we polka need hasn't done much here, but that's to go. No, polka has not
keep,
really.
I keep hoping,
that a good polka rock band will come out. Dropkick Adolf, maybe.
Yes, you know, we'll come on. But,
it's a lot of it's been new people coming in, and it's also been. It used to be everybody's kids graduated and went to Bishop or Faulkner or South. And now people's kids graduate and they go to Auburn or they go to Alabama or they go to UNO and they see other cultures and they come back and go, "Wouldn't it be nice if we had a Whole Foods in Mobile?"
Yes.
"Wouldn't it be nice if we had a Publix?"
Hey, listen to this. We're up against a break. Can you hold on for one more segment?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, one more segment because I want to ask you about a couple things coming up, some local food events coming up. And, of course, reminder, you can check out these guys for an hour talking about food every Sunday morning right here at FM Talk 106.5. It's Mike and Stu, Sip and Chew, and we'll be right back.
It's Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, too much fun having these guys in the studio. Sip and Chew, Mike and Stu. Of course, you can check them out on Sunday mornings here at FM Talk 106.5. They come on and they get you hungry, and then our buddy Bill Finch comes on and tells you how to grow some of the food that y'all cook, right?
Yes. One important thing that Bill's taught me in knowing him now is we were talking about gumbo earlier. Well, you know, you got to have Trinity to start your gumbo.
Yeah,
we've all heard that. Trinity. It's onion, what is it? Celery, bell pepper.
But here's the thing. Celery is not native to this area.
Can't grow
celery,
here.
It can't grow here. It grows up along the Canadian border.
And so 50 years ago.
I guess the French, as they came down to New Orleans, they brought celery with them. And as the trade route opened up, and they brought celery really with it. So I have threatened, when I've threatened to do gumbo competitions again, I'm just going to use the stalk of turnips. Because it is native.
Okay, that would make more sense if they would have had...
And that's Bill's theory that up until the proliferation of refrigerated grocery stores, you couldn't get celery in the South.
Good point.
And so they had to use something else, and his theory is it was probably the stalks from collards and turnips and mustard greens.
Yeah, and so I've been wanting to do that in one of my competitions. I don't want to give my secret away, but still, I've been threatening to do that.
Just hide it under the lima beans.
And, you know, the fish Fish River Grill, she has that swamp soup.
Yeah.
That's got, turnips or collards or something in it.
Yeah.
Good God, that stuff's good.
See, now I got my mind moving to a whole new place there.
I want to do a swamp gumbo for you sometime, Sean.
Okay, and I want to eat it for you.
Here are the ingredients.
Okay.
Frog legs.
Okay.
Gator tail.
Yep.
And there's a great sausage out in Louisiana, I believe the company's Cajun Spice, that the sausage is smoked pork shoulder and crawfish.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
And call it, and maybe a little duck fat to start murdering.
Okay.
You can shoot me a duck or two.
I can't. You know, that's why. Let's try to do that. Maybe we'll do that actually as a video, do something for a YouTube video or something this year. Well, I'll bring some ducks in. I'll keep them cold from the causeway to get to you. We won't dress them until we get to your place. We'll dress them, show folks how to do that. Yep. And then you know, because a lot of times that duck and stuff, people just take the breast out instead of plucking the whole duck, but you're leaving, I mean, the skin is a big deal, and the duck fat's a big deal. And
especially the duck fat's the biggest deal.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's the most valuable part.
Well, we will make that happen. And also, I still owe you, during season, some crawfish, because I crawfish trap, and I know you've called me before, and that's one thing, it's just being seasonal. People say, hey, Sean, I got a call from my kid's school the other day, because I put the crawfish in all the aquariums at their schools in science class. They said, we need crawfish right now. I said, I can go dig.
Has issued a flood warning for eastern Baldwin County in southwestern Alabama, Escambia County in south central Alabama, western Santa Rosa County in northwestern Florida, Escambia County in northwestern Florida, until 7:45 p.m. Central Daylight Time. At 1:49 p.m. Central Daylight Time, occasional moderate rain along with runoff from early heavy rain will continue to cause flooding problems in the warned area. Some locations that will experience flooding include Pensacola, Ferry Pass, Brent, West Pensacola, Ensley, Warrington, Gonzales, Atmore, Pace, Gulf Breeze, Brutum, Orange Beach, Gooling, Century, Philomaton, Lillian, Myrtle Grove, McCullough, Oriole Beach, and East Brutum. Turn around, don't drown when encountering flooded roads. Most flood deaths occur in vehicles.
I mean, hogs and kudzu. We need a dish that has hogs and kudzu.
Chris cooks with kudzu.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, if you can.
And I told you he made a soup with a bobcat that was killing chickens. He didn't want to just kill the bobcat.
Yeah.
So he cooked the bobcat, made a stew out of it called menudo.
Okay.
I haven't tried it. Brody Olive and he were on a hunting trip out near Eufaula, I believe.
Okay, we're going to have to get him on the show and talk about cookies and Bobcat here.
Chris is a character. He's been on our show several times. He may have even sat in one time. He wants to come in one Sunday morning and cook the lionfish nachos while we're doing the show.
Okay, I'm going to be in on that morning. Speaking of which, you and I were talking, too. There's a Walmart food champs?
Chris is one of the Walmart food champs. What Walmart did is they paired with World Food Championships, which is in Orange Beach.
Right.
Last year, this year. And hopefully, I think they signed a contract for the next 4 or 5 years. But it is the world's largest food sport event, and it's right here on the Gulf Coast now. We stole it from Orlando and Las Vegas.
Wow.
And they love Orange Beach more than they love Orlando and Las Vegas because we've got so much good food here, and it's not that expensive, and everybody can get here, and everybody. Where would you rather be in November? Orange Beach or Las Vegas, Nevada.
Right. Well, if they're not a gambler, I'd be here. Yeah. Right.
Well, Walmart has seen all of these food champs because I'm telling you, I competed last year, and Mike knows this. There were 37 people in my group. I came in 36th, and I guarantee you, my dish would have won any other contest I've ever been in.
It's that good.
It's that good. There were 11 points separating me in first place in my category, from first to 36, and. And that competition's like that everywhere. There's people who've been on Food Network, on Bravo, Chopped, everything. James Beard,
all their chef coats like displays like all their, you know, like NASCAR. Yeah.
Walmart saw us and saw how influential these chefs are, and paired with us to come into their stores and do cooking demos with their now upgraded product line from Great Value. They've got some phenomenal. In fact, Chris did a cooking demonstration. You can get Angus beef at Walmart now. USDA choice, great steaks. You can get grass-fed beef. You can get lamb. And Chris is doing these demos, and he's doing four of them this weekend at the Daphne Walmart.
Okay.
Saturday and Sunday. I don't know the exact times, but they'll probably be like 10 to noon, 2 to 4.
Okay.
Right in the, so, you know, if your team is playing Saturday, he'll be there Sunday.
Okay.
But go, and you can talk to Chris. They're very interactive. He's telling you exactly what he's doing. He'll have recipes for you. And we're touring the whole country with these. And, you know,
this is awesome. This is cool. So this happened right here at home. And so that's this week. When's the food championship? When's
World Food Championship is November 8th through the 11th.
8th through the 11th.
At the Wharf in Orange Beach. I'm going back again, this time in the burger category, which people that remember me from my days at Lucky and my stint at Beer Garden know I'm a burger guy. Last year I went in seafood, which I'm, you know, I grew up here, but I was going up against chefs who do nothing but seafood.
Right.
I have done mostly burgers, steaks, and stuff like that. So I'm in a category that fits my talents better this year.
Right.
And last year, you know, coming back from the accident that I had, last year I was just like, I'm here. I'm glad to be here.
You know, we were all glad you were here.
You know, I was the Cleveland Browns if they ever make the Super Bowl. I'm just glad to be here.
Right.
This year I want money.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money on the line at this thing. A lot of money. I think this year we're up to $370,000 in prizes.
Say what?
Yeah, in prizes. A grand champion gets $100,000. If I have one of the top 10 burgers there, $500 at least right off the top.
Nice.
If I have the burger with the highest point total with mushrooms, that's another $1,000 bonus.
That's the mushroom incentive kicker there.
Right,
yes.
Right. There's also a red gold tomato incentive, and my burger happens to be made with fresh canned tomatoes to make a marinara.
How about it?
So there's another $1,000. There's also a cook-off of the people who have the highest scores that don't make the top 10 in their category, and there are 10 categories. Those next people get to go into a one-on-one with each other to cook duck. Duck dish, and they can win $1,000 for that. So there's money to be made everywhere. It's an incredible thing. Last year there were over 400 chefs from, I think, 13 different countries, and this year it's going to be even bigger because we've got Walmart on as a sponsor. We've got a lot. Red Gold is a huge sponsor. And by the way, Red Gold, which is probably the premium canned tomato in our grocery stores across the country, different regions have different ones. They're actually ones that can Walmart's tomatoes for them now.
I'll be darned. So this is going on in November in our area, but we're going to run out of time here in a second, so I got to get to this too. Got another event coming up
a World Food Championship preliminary.
Okay.
At what we used to call Fort Condi.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's now
the Colonial Fort
of Mobile or something.
Hey, Scott's got a fancy name for it. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Bo Jackson's going to be in town.
Right.
He's got his own line of signature burgers, and everyone has to use his burger blend to come up with the best burger they can. We got restaurants going head to head. Amateurs can go in there and go head to head. Plus, Sylvia's is going to have their own menu that day at the fort, showcasing all of this wonderful gourmet burger meat that
coming up.
November 16th.
Okay. October.
September.
Right. November is the championship. Right, this preliminary is September 16th.
September 16th downtown. It'll be all day long, I believe, like 12 to 6, I think.
I don't know. I can ride my bike over there.
Yeah.
Well, good deal. My problem is I can ride my bike to a lot of events. It's just the getting back from the event. That's the issue. This is great. What a great conversation. I'm glad I grabbed you. I'm glad you hung out, and I'll be listening for more of this on Sunday morning. Mike and Stu, thanks, guys.
Provolone. Hey, had a great time. Provolone, folks. Provolone.
That's right. They'll sign it off this way. I'll sign it off. Hey, y'all. See you tomorrow. Fine Bomb on the way next.